Oh, hey, everybody. How you doing? It's me, Charlie, your fearless host. Actually, I got a lot of fears. We'll get into those later. But anyway, this is the Cripescast. This is a podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. Who are we talking to today, Charlie? Today, we are talking to Wisconsin's own Skylar Gray. Now, you may know Skylar as, you know, she's an incredible musician. She's got a bunch of hits out there. You may not know she's also a songwriter. She's written for the likes of Rihanna and Eminem and Celine Dion and more. And what you probably most definitely did not know is that Skylar's music career started at the age of 6 when she started performing with her mom. And they would tour around the Madison area, actually, playing like libraries and stuff. So that was fun. There's a lot of cool stories in this conversation. I really enjoy Skylar. Just a ton of fun to talk to. She's got a great Midwest soul, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you that right now. Okie dokes. Although she doesn't live in the Midwest anymore. She lives in California. But I did my best pitch to kind of sell her on moving back to the Midwest. It involved a silo. Okay, so that's what we call a deep cut. You're going to have to listen to the whole podcast to figure out where that one's going. Okie dokes, what's going on with me? Actually, right now I'm recording this podcast in a car. I've recorded a few podcasts recently in a car. I'm recording the intro in a car. I didn't do the whole conversation. But I am in Utah, Park City, Utah. We're doing a pretty cool video with Duluth Trading Company and with USA Luge. Yeah, it's right. The U.S. team is training in Park City. They got this luge course here, and I am going to do the luge tomorrow. So if this is the last Cripescast you ever hear, that is why. Everybody, you know, say your rosary that's not the case. But, you know, if it is, you better finish that rosary so I get out of purgatory earlier, okay? Grandma, I'm talking to you right now, okie dokes. Also, ladies and gentlemen, we are 1 month away today, actually. Or was it yesterday? I don't know. Anyway, in a month-ish, my book, The Midwest Survival Guide, is coming out. I can't tell you how excited I am about this book. And if you pre-order it, geez Louise, I will love you to Reese's Pieces. Honest to Pete, I will. Also, I'm on tour. I want to thank everyone who came out to Chicago and Des Moines and Omaha and all those places. We just had so much fun, and the fun continues this week. I'm in Mankato and Rochester, Minnesota. Also Green Bay, we've got shows coming up. Just added a third show in Milwaukee in January, and many more. You can check all of this out, the book, the shows, the merch, whatever you want. You can check it all out at CripesCast.com. Okie dokes, on that note, it is time now for my conversation with Skylar Gray. Good to see you. Thanks for your flexibility this morning. Sorry, it's a little bit on the early side.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just such a night owl.
Is that when you're like the most creative, or is that just
a yeah, it's creativity, and also just it's when I think, you know, at night when everything's quiet.
Do you feel like that idea of like the world isn't moving, people aren't firing off emails, you get distracted less? Is that sort of
exactly. I can like really hear myself think. So I like to stay up late and just kind of think.
How do you do that? I mean, do you just like sit around? You don't watch TV, you don't have those distractions?
No, I do. Okay. I sometimes like to have like background noise, so I like will be watching TV, but I'm really not paying attention.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. What's
your
idea?
Unless it's like a movie that I really want to, you know, dive into, then I'll pay attention. But if it's like last night I had Entourage on in the background, you know, I've seen it before.
Yeah, right. Right. So that Entourage is your white noise. That's funny. Do you ever watch something and get inspiration from it and like write a song as if you were one of the characters in something you write? Write a song as if you were one of the characters in one of the movies or TV shows you're watching.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I get inspired by film and TV.
Yeah.
That's why I like to work in it so much. I like to make music for movies.
Yeah. Is that a much different process than just making your own song?
It can be. It depends on the situation. Like if I'm writing specifically for something, I like to like dive into the story. Sometimes I'll get a copy of the script or I'll get scenes from the movie. And then I like put myself in the shoes of like what's going on, the character or the emotion of what's going on in the scene. And then I try to create music for it. But like with this recent one that I did for Venom, the Venom movie, it was actually a song, a hook that I had sitting around for like 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't write it specifically for Venom, but it was just like in my folder. I have a folder of like 2000 songs that, you know, they get pitched out and took 5 years to find a home.
Yeah, I heard you say that in a different interview. You wrote something for Pitch Perfect at one point, and then it ended up in a completely different place, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. You did your research.
I did. Yeah, thank you.
That's deep info. I forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, but I forget where it ended up. You wrote for Pitch Perfect, and then it ended up.
Oh, it ended up in a TV show. Was it called Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Yeah. Yep. On Hulu. Now it's all coming back. And I thought what was interesting about that is it was kind of inspired by the Barbershop Quartet, which your dad was in.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Jeez Louise, that's real awesome. Where'd your accent go? Did you ever lose that or what happened?
It comes out by the end of this interview, listening to you talk, it'll come back. But I moved to LA when I was 17. So I think I've spent enough time on the West Coast where it got,
It finds its way back out. Do you drink at all? So like when you drink, that's when I like I did news for a while. And but when I drank, all that voice I trained myself to use, it just goes away, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah. And just like if I go back to a wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Like at home, it's just full blown. And I come back and my fiance is like, what happened to your voice?
You know, hon, I don't know, but is this not sexy or what? You know, jeez Louise. What phrases, we'll get to your dad in a second, but what phrases do you find yourself still using, still some holdover phrases from Wisconsin?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's phrases necessarily. It's just like the accent that like comes out. I don't know about any Wisconsin phrases that I use.
Screwed the pooch. You don't say that.
No.
Ass over tea kettle.
No.
Cheapers cripes.
No.
You've been gone too long. You've been gone too long.
I know. I guess I have.
But your dad, Barbershop Quartet. So what would that look like? Was that his full-time
deal? No, he was an engineer at the Wisconsin DOT. But he used to have a barbershop quartet like as a hobby. And they were called the Amazos because I was from Mazomani, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So their name was the Amazos.
That's Amazos. I love that. I love that. Good play on words, Charlie. That's why I'm a pro. Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Like, where would they perform? For people who don't know what a barbershop quartet is, what is that?
It's like an a cappella singing group. So there was four people in it, and they all just sang, you know, their different harmony parts and did arrangements of a lot of different cover songs and would perform at really random like local events, like I don't know, 4th of July fireworks or you know, like that kind of stuff.
State fairs, supper clubs, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah They were great.
You were performing as well as a kid with your mom.
Yeah, because my mom was also a musician. She had some folk groups that she sang with, and then she also played Celtic harp.
She
was really supportive of my from a really young age, I showed interest in making music because she would, you know, have rehearsal at her house with her music partners. And I would just chime in and start singing harmony parts. And so they recognized it really early on that I like wanted to make music. And so she was really supportive and put me on stage for the first time when I was 6.
Wow.
At a library, the Canterbury Bookstore in Madison.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah.
I played like a 45-minute set.
Wow.
And
at 6 years old?
Yeah.
How are the acoustics in a library, typically speaking?
They were fantastic.
Are they? A lot actually, of deadening with all the books and everything?
Exactly. Yeah. It's nice and quiet.
You have a recording studio at your house. Do you have any books in there to remind you of the good old days? No?
No.
Maybe
I mean,
you will.
I'm sure I could find a book around here somewhere, but...
Oh, you're in the recording studio right now. Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so actually there's one studio desk back there, and then you're here at my studio desk. So my fiance and I both make music, and we work back to back in this room because we don't like to be apart from each other. We're super in love. It gets really challenging when we're both trying to sing vocals.
Yeah. there could be like a weird time though where like he's got the cans in and he's singing one song and you've got yours in and you're singing another and you're both like in sort of a tangential key and maybe you kind of like hit the same parts. Maybe that could happen. And then you're like, we could create a new song from these two songs.
You know, I like the way you think, but that's not the way it happens usually.
Okay, all right. Well, this is a comedian trying to talk to a musician. This is what happens, I suppose. Where are you? What location is the studio in?
Napa Valley, California.
Ooh, did you get hit with any of the fires or anything like that?
Yeah, we had to fight them last year. This year we didn't have anything, luckily. But last year, not at this property, but at another property, we were out there with garden hoses.
Oh, wow. Yeah, just making sure everything would
No, like fighting the fire. It was right to the property line.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts of like, oh, maybe we should move out of here at some point? Or are you going to be sitting there with the hoses for...
No, I mean, I don't mind the hoses. Yeah. I actually, it's weird. I get kind of excited when things like that happen. The adrenaline of it. Even though it's totally horrible. I don't know.
No, you know what that is?
It's like tornadoes in Wisconsin. I get so excited.
I was just going to say that. This is your Midwesterner at heart. Do you go out onto the front balcony and crack a beer and just watch it happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure. Drive around on ATVs with beers and like, you know, go check out... Scope it out from high up.
Scope it out, yeah. See how much farther. Yeah, this will be coming in pretty quick now. So, you know, show's about to start. That's that's hilarious. That's such a Midwest thing to do. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, you were at a point in your career where things weren't going particularly well, right? And then you went off into a cabin somewhere and you started writing. And... give us that story, and specifically, where was this cabin? Was it in Wisconsin by any chance?
No, it wasn't. But
dang, that would have been the bit we used. But you know, we'll see what happens. Where was the cabin?
It was in Oregon.
Oregon, okay, cool. Yeah. So,
but you know, like I grew up in the woods in Wisconsin, on the outskirts of Mazomanie.
You were in outskirts. You weren't a townie, huh?
No,
you were,
in the woods.
So was this like one of those backwoods deals with an outhouse, or did you have running water and all that?
I had running water, but it was in a separate building. So I had to like go outside every time I wanted to use the bathroom. And so like in the middle of the night, if I had to pee, it was kind of terrifying because I had to like walk a ways down, you know, a path. To get to this little like outhouse, and there's mountain lions, and it's pretty scary.
Yeah, did they have a bunch of mountain lions?
Uh huh.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
I didn't realize Wisconsin had. I mean,
not in Wisconsin.
Oh,
in my
okay.
cabin in Oregon.
Oh, so I was totally confused because.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I
grew up in the woods. But in Wisconsin, but I'm talking about the cabin that I lived
okay,
in.
Okay. So in Wisconsin, though, it was just a normal house over in the woods.
It was in the woods. Yes. I didn't have to use the bathroom outside as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I had a real bathroom.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. No, but the cabin was more like backwoodsy, rustic, like creepy vibes.
And at this point, you chose to go there. Because you were what brought you to Oregon from you were going LA and LA wasn't working out and
well yeah as a kid like living in Wisconsin my stepdad was a wood sculptor And he would get all his wood from the beach in Oregon. So we would drive across country like every year to go pick up wood from the Oregon coast and bring it back so he could carve it.
Oh, wow.
So Oregon was some place that like we went a lot, and it felt like a home away from home.
Yeah.
And then when I was living in LA, and I got my first record deal when I was like 19. And then I lost it when I was like 22 or something. 22 or 23, it like all fell apart. And I had this like, you know, when it rains, it pours moment in my life. Everything was going wrong. Lost my record deal, lost my manager, my lawyer, my boyfriend broke up with me. It was just like a shitstorm.
Brutal.
And so I was like, I'm out of here. And I couldn't afford LA at that point too. You know, I went completely broke. And so I just drove up the coast to Oregon. And my mom had a friend who had this property that had this cabin on it, and she let me stay there. So I just moved in, and I needed, like, there was something in my gut telling me to get back to my roots in a way. Like, I know I wasn't going back to Wisconsin, but like just nature in general, feels like home to me more so than like a major city like LA. And I needed to get back in touch with like my essence.
Yeah.
I felt like I totally lost myself in LA. I didn't know who I was anymore, you know?
Well, and what initially, and we'll get to the cabin in a second, but what initially got you out to LA? You're growing up, you're singing with your mom, you realize you have a gift for this, but 17 is a very young age to go out to LA. Mm-hmm. What brought you out there?
I was just, I was performing a lot in Wisconsin, and I kind of just felt like I was outgrowing Wisconsin as a musician. Like,
you don't say, you know, the supper clubs weren't enough for you, huh?
I was just like, if I really want to make a career out of this, like, I can't stay here my whole life, you know?
Right. Well, especially at that time.
Yeah. And I was already on this path, and I was working my ass off, and I dropped out of high school because I felt like it was pointless for me to be learning things that I knew I wasn't going to use in my life and my career. Mm-hmm. So I just left.
You didn't think you could write a amazing song about advanced geometry?
No.
No. Okay.
No. It was not something I was inspired by.
So did you pack up the car? Were your parents supportive of this?
My mom was supportive. My dad was a little skeptical, but I mean, I was so independent already at that point. There was like really nothing he could do to stop me.
Siblings?
I was making my own money and
doing gigs. You were making your own money doing gigs. Mm-hmm. Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have an older sister.
And
she went to UW. And then she went to medical school in Grenada. I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
And then she moved to LA. She works in LA as a pediatrician.
Oh, wow.
With her husband. And she has four kids. Has all the kids. Like, I don't have to have any kids because she had enough for both of us. She had four kids, and her husband's also a doctor. They're the smarty pants of the family.
Ah, nice. Yeah. Nice.
I'm the musician, the black sheep, you know.
Yeah. So you say, all right, I'm going out. So you drive out. What kind of a car are you driving out in? Or did you fly out?
I just assumed.
Out. See, I that's why out. You can't assume. I relearn these lessons all the time.
Yeah.
So you fly out there, and what? Did you have anything? Did you have a record deal? Anything lined up?
No, I didn't have a record deal. I just had some contacts, like some songwriting contacts, and I slept on couches and, you know, worked my way to the right people.
Just how it happens. You can just go out there and work your way to the right people. How'd you start? Uh-huh. That's kind of unusual. I feel like a lot of people go out there to work their way to the right people, but then 10 years goes by and they're like, I'm still doing the coffee thing.
You can definitely get in the wrong crowds out there. Luckily I had people that were pretty nurturing. I met some songwriters that were really helpful in my, like, getting me to, you know, I spent a lot of time in the recording studio, and I actually spent my college savings on making demos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I met somebody in a hallway at the studio who introduced me to my first lawyer. Like, it's just being there and like being in the mix and being around people, you meet people and you make connections. It's just, I mean, the music industry is a pretty small world. So if you're out there and you're active, you're like making music and meeting people, eventually you'll meet somebody who knows somebody, and it starts a pathway for you to, you know.
Yeah. I feel like some people can go out there and maybe they spend more time working on the networking aspect, not enough time working on their craft. Exactly, how did you balance those two things?
I mean, I was so young that the networking thing was pretty limited. I couldn't like go into a bar at 17.
That helps.
You know, yeah. So my networking was pretty much just if I was in a studio and met somebody, like I said, in the hallway or in the lounge. And then the producers that I was working with, they would, you know, bring other people in and I would connect with them. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Did you, it kind of happens. Yeah. Did you get into the party scene out there in LA or were you always so focused on music? You didn't let that stuff distract you?
I didn't get into the party scene that much. No. I mean, I definitely went to some parties, but yeah, I stayed clear of drugs and just, you know, I like my booze.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Yeah. What's your go-to booze? Do you like brandy old fashions being from Wisconsin? Although you were too young to drink those.
Yeah. Then. No, I wasn't. Come on now.
I set that out there. That was a test and you passed.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I started, you know, my sister was 4 years older than me. So she was going to college when I was still in high school. So I'd go to her parties and.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I had my first Jell-O Red Dog when I was 8. Oh, Jell-O shots. That's nice. Did you ever drink Red Dog in Wisconsin? No. You really missed out, honestly. It's a fantastic beer. But all right.
I loved Spotted Cow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Spotted Cow. Yeah, that's an actual good beer. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a nice one.
You ever go back and bring some Spotted Cows back to Napa? Show those wine drinkers.
Yeah, I have done that before.
Yeah. What do the wine drinkers out there think about Spotted Cow? Are they fans?
I think so. Yeah.
So you shared. You shared your Spotted Cow. That's so Midwest nice of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so you're out in LA. You're doing the thing. And what's your first hit where you're like, all right, this is going to work out?
I mean, just getting a record deal was the biggest like indication that I was doing the right thing. That was only a year or so after I moved there.
Okay.
I got a record deal with, and the reason I went through my lawyer that I had met through somebody in a hallway in a studio, who introduced me to a manager, who introduced me to Linkin Park's manager, Van Linkin Park. And then the guitar player from Linkin Park came to meet me at a hotel bar where I played a few songs for him on the piano in the bar. And he like offered me a record deal like on the spot.
Okay. See, you know what? These are the stories. I'm just going to tell you. These are the stories that's just going to inspire a bunch of people to go out to LA and be like, this is how it's done. This is the path. But I feel like you're insanely talented, obviously. But a lot of times it takes, I don't know. I guess this is all just story of pure talent. You get out there, you start working, and then you do this. A lot of people don't have that talent or don't have that luck.
Yeah, I think it's also just persistence and drive and like being completely obsessed with what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like no, totally unwavering with what I do. I wake up and think, breathe, sleep, eat, music.
Yeah.
That's just it. And so like I have definitely down points in my career when nothing's happening. But if I just am persistent with it, things pop up like out of the blue, almost, it seems.
What like gives you that internal drive to need to do music? What is it inside you that does that?
I think it's a couple things. Well, first of all, I just am a pure like artist at heart and I just love creating. And there's no high like making a song that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And listening back in the speakers and being like, that's so fucking sick. Like just that feeling alone is enough for me to want to do it every day.
Yeah.
You know, and then also there's this, I think, definitely a part of me that like wants to prove myself still. I don't know. I think it's because it stems from like childhood a little bit. I never felt super cool growing up in Wisconsin. Like I was like the girl who kind of like sat alone at lunch.
Oh, and no.
Yeah. So I like wanted to be accepted by my peers. And so there's like always this underlying like thing of wanting to like prove myself. And I even had a teacher that told me music wasn't a career. She was my math teacher and
of course she was.
Algebra. And I remember I had like a test and I had to do like 60 questions of math homework, but I had a show that night. And so I came to school and I didn't have my homework done, but I aced the test, like this quiz, right?
Yeah.
And she like got mad at me and she said, "You need to do your homework just like the rest of the class." And I was like, "But I had a show last night. I couldn't, like, I didn't have time to do it." And she was like, "Well, you need to like reprioritize because music's not a career."
Mm, that sounds like Wisconsin.
And I literally was like, "Then I quit your class." And I quit. Wow. And I walked out and I never went back.
That was when you were 17? It's when you walked out of the whole thing, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Were your parents happy about that?
I mean, it is what it is. Like, yeah, my mom was always very supportive. My dad was, you know.
He got there.
He wanted me to go to college, but I think, you know, I showed him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually meant to do this. Well, and, I remember when I got my first Grammy nominations, I called my dad because I was like, this is going to be validating for him. I feel like being able to say, okay, hey, Dad, I just got nominated for a bunch of Grammys. Like,
wow,
I'm really meant to be doing this. I promise you.
What did he say?
He was very proud.
Was he?
Yeah. And ever since then, he's never questioned my move.
Are they still in Wisconsin?
Uh-huh.
Did he do the Wisconsin? Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Good for you.
That. Oh, yeah.
Real good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
Full on.
Nice. So you've got all this validation going early on in your career. You get a record deal, all that. And then this backstory, I feel like, is really good to kind of build up your emotional place at this point, because everything's going great and then kind of it seems like the bottom falls out.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, you dropped out of high school. Like, this is your option
right
at this point. So that's got to put you into kind of a low place in life.
Yeah, it was hard because I found myself needing help, like, financially at that point in my life. And I had been trying to prove myself and had done a lot at that point. This is like before the Grammy nominations, all that stuff. I had had a record deal. I was working with Linkin Park. I had a song out called "Where'd You Go." I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'd had a little bit of success, but it was so new to me. I didn't really know how to handle the success of it and how to like capitalize on it. I had this one hit song and then I was like, okay, now what do I do? And that song didn't make me any money, by the way. I got paid $500 to sing that vocal.
Oh yeah, you got the studio buyout or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I didn't musician.
I didn't make royalties. I didn't write that hook.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't making royalties. And so even though I had the song on the radio, I was super broke. And I wasn't really prepared for like how to follow that up. And I don't know. I was just inexperienced.
Yeah. And then what? So you just go a long enough time without getting enough new songs or new hits or requests to sing. And so your label drops you.
Yeah, it was more than that. But it was a kind of a personal falling out I had. Linkin Park.
Oh, some bad happened?
Yeah, I'm not really supposed to talk about it, but I had a falling out. And so it was a lot of things. It was very complicated.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then we parted ways and I went broke completely. And I had nobody left in my corner, really, in LA. The only person I still had was my publisher, because I had a publishing deal with UMPG. Her name was Jennifer Blakeman. And After I moved to the cabin in the woods and I like did a lot of soul searching, I reached out to her because I realized when I was in the woods, I was like, okay, I have to figure out a way to make a living in music because I don't have any other options. Mm. You know, like there's nothing else I'm good at. There's nothing else I want to do. And the only person I could call, because I had nobody, I had no manager, lawyer, anything. I called my publisher and I said, hey, I know it's been a few years since we've talked, but I really need to figure this out. Can you help me?
Yeah.
And she was open arms and she was like, of course. She said, come to New York, let's talk. And so I spent an entire day just like sitting in her office brainstorming how to like turn my life around, basically. And she introduced me to this guy, this producer that they had just signed. His name was Alex the Kid. And she introduced me just on email. I went back to Oregon and I started talking to this producer. He sent me a track, like just a music bed. And I wrote a hook over it and sent it back to him. And then it, a month later, was the number one song in the world. And that song was Love the Way You Lie.
And everybody knows Love the Way You Lie, Rihanna, Eminem. And could you have written that if you weren't at that place in your life?
I don't think so. No. Because before that, I had been chasing certain sounds and vibes that were like not authentic to me. And then when I got back in touch with, you know, why do I even make music and what do I love about music? You know, I had to find that again when I was in the woods. And so then when I came back into music, I took a different approach. It was just like doing what felt almost effortless. Like that hook was effortless for me to write. It wasn't like trying to chase any sound or be something I wasn't. It was just like what came out of me. And that's, I think, what works the best, because authenticity, I think, really shines through, you know, in music.
No, it's funny how that works. I feel like sometimes the best things I've written, it's at a point where I almost don't feel like I'm writing it. I'm like, oh,
channeling it.
Shit, thank you for that. You know, it's almost like you're a thing that you don't know where it comes from, but you're right. It is
exactly
effortless, but it takes so much effort to be effortless. I mean, you have to work totally at the craft and the mechanics, but then sometimes the greatest inspiration is like, you gotta stop working or you gotta stop pushing so hard and just let it come.
Exactly, you get it. Some of my best work has just come so effortlessly, but again, it does take effort to get to that point, you know? Because I always say that hook took me 15 minutes to write. But it took 23 years and 15 minutes. 23 years of doing all the wrong shit to get to that point where those 15 minutes started and I wrote that piece, you know?
And I think that's got to be encouraging for other artists out there who feel like, you know, maybe their time has passed or it's hopeless or everything they've been doing has been for nothing. But what to the thing I think you're saying here is that all is leading to something.
Yeah, it is. I really believe it is.
After that happened, did things repair with the whole Linkin Park deal, or are you can't say anything about that?
No, I didn't go back to them. I started a new relationship with Interscope Records. And so I got a record deal with Interscope right after writing Love the Way You Lie. Actually, it was like a year later that I signed a deal. I was nervous about signing a record deal for a long time. Because I was a little damaged from the first one.
Sure.
And so I don't know if you saw that performance I did with Eminem and Dr. Dre on the Grammys in 2011.
Yeah.
I was completely still unsigned at that point.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible that happens. I mean, and was it because you weren't ready to go with
it? Yeah, I was scared.
Okay, you were scared. But it's not like you didn't have offers out there before then.
No, I had a lot of offers, yeah.
Okay.
And I also just was like being smarter about it. I was like, you know, I want to keep building this up so that I get the best deal possible.
Right.
Instead of just signing the first thing that comes across my desk, you know?
Yeah, very, very smart. And when you wrote Love the Way You Lie, very personal song for you. And Rihanna is obviously singing it. Now, was there the option at any point for you to sing it? Or were you, as soon as you heard Rihanna was interested, you were just like, yes, Rihanna?
I mean, of course I wanted to sing it. Mm-hmm. I wrote the song with myself in mind, not her, but I'm also a big Rihanna fan. And
yeah.
Also, I was nobody. Like, nobody knew who I was. Right. And so for Eminem to put this nobody on the song, it wouldn't have been as big.
Right,
I think the combination of Eminem and Rihanna doing the song is what drew so much attention to it in the first place. And sure. It wouldn't have been necessarily as massive of a song. So I was just very grateful for that opportunity and opened so many doors for me.
Sure. What is it like though, taking something that's so close to you and then kind of releasing it to somebody else?
It was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard. Cause I always wanted to be an artist myself. Like, I never intended on writing songs for other people. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of became a thing I started to do more, writing songs for other singers, because it was making me good money. Mm-hmm. So it was like a path that I never saw my career taking, like a different trajectory. But now I'm coming back to the artist thing. I'm tired of writing songs for other people.
Oh, okay. Because you've written songs not just for a ton of people, Celine Dion. Have you written that out now completely as an option, or would you be open to it if it happened again, or just focused on your stuff?
I think writing songs for other people is like my plan B if okay. I can't, you know, make it as an artist myself. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm doing pretty good right now. I'm going to stick with being an artist for a while and, you know, let that play out.
Got it. Speaking of which, last one standing. How does this process work? Like, I guess with Eminem specifically, did you guys first meet with Love the Way You Lie?
Yeah.
Did you bond over any Midwest stuff at all?
I don't think so. Not really.
No, it didn't come into play. It, fun guy to work with?
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
So he fun. Is? Is he hilarious just like in talking? Just like,
well, he's just... Yeah, he's like he likes to give me a lot of shit.
Does he? What's he giving you shit about?
He'll say stuff like, "The song's really good, but it'll be way better once we take your vocal off of it."
What a jackass!
Just like constantly shit talking.
Yeah. Do you give it back to him?
Sometimes I'm not as quick witted as him.
But. I know it's tough. He's got so much comedy in his lyrics. It's also like you don't want to. You can like poke the bear a little bit, but you know you don't want the next thing he comes out with is Skylar Grey diss track. Like a diss track.
What is that?
Didn't he just do it like Machine Gun Kelly? He wrote
a diss track.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did you think?
I thought you were saying disc track.
Oh,
it's like, compact disc. Track?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what is this old school shit you're talking about? A diss track. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank God he's not doing any diss tracks.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. He's good at those, I've heard.
Last
one standing. What inspired that one for you?
It was like I mentioned earlier, it was a hook that I wrote with a couple people like 5 years ago, something like that.
What were you the main creative force behind it?
It was a collaboration.
Collaboration.
I was one of those ones. I was in the room with a couple other people and we were just, playing around and coming up with melodies and lyrics and bouncing things off of each other. I don't really remember the session because it was so long ago.
Yeah, right.
But and then the song was sitting in my folder, like I said. And sometimes as a songwriter, musician, artist, this game can get really discouraging because you put all this time and energy and effort into these songs and then they just sit in a Dropbox folder for years. And so you think you suck. But then things like this happen.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, that was not a wasted session.
It was not for
you
nothing.
You know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's good to have these reminders to just keep going and yeah, like no session is wasted. Like it's never a waste of time to write a song.
Right. Well, you write so many different songs, so many different genres. You know, you're able to do them all very well. Is there a genre that you kind of enjoy the most?
I'm glad you asked this question. I have worked in a lot of genres. And I think sometimes in the past, I was chasing whatever I thought would be successful in that particular genre, instead of just really doing what I loved, I was like maybe chasing the success.
Yeah.
And I've come to a point in my career and my life where I don't want to do that anymore. I only want to make music that I truly love and want to listen to. And so what I like to say about genres is like, I don't like to say I have a genre, but I have a mood. And whatever genre I'm working in, whether it's EDM, hip hop, pop, whatever genre I'm working in, as long as my contribution is the same mood, then that's what matters. And so like this song, Last One Standing, is obviously a hip hop track. But if you just take out my vocal, that mood is my genre, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Oh, geez Louise, ladies and gentlemen, how in the heck are you? Excuse the interruption. We just gotta thank some of our amazing sponsors here. And folks, we don't just take any sponsor here at the Cripes Cast, okay? You wouldn't have any idea how many people approach us about, you know, doing an ad for body waxing. Okay, but we say no. We turn down that money because we just want to promote, you know, the places that I know and love. Okay, and one of them places is Jolly Good Soda, okay? Now, you might not be able to wax your what have yous with Jolly Good Soda, but I tell you what, it makes your soul a lot happier, okay? You pour yourself a Jolly Good floater on your old fashioned. I like to go Sour Power because I like to live on the wild side. It's just a fantastic soda, and you can buy it at jollygoodsoda.com. They also got some Jolly Good candles. So if you want, you know, your bathroom smelling like a Jolly Good instead of whatever else you just put in there that possibly made you feel Jolly Good, but it don't smell Jolly Good, you light up one of them candles and you keep her moving. And also, folks, I want to mention Duluth Trading Company, the most fantastic clothes in all the Midwest. I wear Duluth Trading Company every day. I got some of their sweats on right now, okay, and they're nice. I wear them to the gym, I wear them to bed. I'm not a very hygienic individual, but that don't matter because the clothes are very comfortable. Duluth Trading Company, it's made for a functional life. And might I say, it's also very fashionable. Check them out at DuluthTrading.com. And finally, folks, if you're looking for Man to Walk Minute merch, I'm talking stuff that says keep her moving or watch out for deer or Ope or go Packers and you know what, the Bears. Check us out on mandwalkminute.com or cripescast.com. Just click on the merch section. You can also get us at your nearest Fleet Farm. Okay, also we got hats and koozies, cribbage boards, the whole nine. And of course, the Midwest Survival Guide is up there too. So get your Christmas shopping done early. Head on over to cripescast.com and keep her moving. Hey, speaking of the Cripes Cast, let's get back to it right now. Musical influences for you growing up that inspired your mood?
I grew up listening to and loving Radiohead, Fiona Apple, Dido. I liked like more melancholy, softer vocals and moodier music, you know? A little bit darker, a little sad, somber.
Got it. And do you, like, what are you working on in the moment? What's in that that 2000 track Dropbox folder that that you're like, this one really needs to be something?
You know, I go through that folder once in a while, and I'm honestly like embarrassed by half of it.
As any artist because probably would be.
Yeah, but it's like stuff that I'm clearly reaching. I'm like, you know, like I tried writing a song for the Trolls movie, and it's like this like very happy, you know, bouncy thing. And I'm just like, that's so not me. Like,
right.
It doesn't feel good to listen to it. It's almost like embarrassing. Even though it's a well-written song, it's just like, it's not my vibe. So most of the songs in there I'm not super stoked on. But then every once in a while, there's like a little gem that, you know, like this one, this last one standing. And so I'm really happy with this one coming out.
Do you think the ones where you're reaching or doing a genre or a mood, we'll say that's not like your mood. I mean, do you think that's lost work, or do you think that pushing you to these different sort of musical corners helps maybe influence or makes you discover something you didn't know you had?
I definitely think pushing yourself and finding your limitations on things is always healthy. And it also, for me, just shows me what I don't want to do.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yep. Which is important, almost as important as figuring out what you do want to do. But
exactly.
I mean, that's kind of a universal thing. I mean, I whatever you're in, I mean, but I think, you know, I know I've been in, do you ever get this? Do you ever get like where you like have to do something for like the money, or you're going to do something for your career or whatever? And in doing that, you get so frustrated, you start writing something else that's like, that becomes like the thing you're excited about. And then maybe that's successful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I sometimes will sit at the computer here making music for like trying to write a song that, you know, somebody asked me to write. Like, oh, this movie's looking for whatever. And I get so frustrated and I'm like, I can't do this. I suck. Like, I get so down on myself.
Yeah.
And then I just like, I'm like, what about that thing I, you know, came up with yesterday? And I like go back to my voice notes and I find this little thing. And then I like just load it in. And it's not, has nothing to do with this movie thing, but it's like, I need to do it to feel better about myself. Like I need to do something that I think is really good now. Cause I did, I just was banging my head against the wall and it wasn't coming. It wasn't working. And I feel like I suck. So then just for me, let me just remind myself that I'm good. And so I'll like load something else into the computer and then I'll go all night and I'll be like, this is fucking epic, you know, and then I'm back, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good insight on the creative process. I mean, one of the things actually that I kind of, you know, it drives me a little nuts is like all the social media that I have to do in order to like make my thing go. Do you get frustrated with that? Like it seems now, one of the models for making songs go is obviously getting to pop off on TikTok or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that new, this new way of promoting music, getting it out there, inspire you, frustrate you?
TikTok frustrates me, I'll be honest. Yeah. And it's because most of the songs that I've found on there that like do really well, there's like a certain structure to them, or like lyric concept, and I feel like it doesn't necessarily go in line with my mood that I was talking about.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to like figure out a way to make my mood work in the TikTok space. I think I will figure it out, and I guess it's kind of a challenge that I'm willing to take on, but I just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. What is the structure that you're seeing on TikTok that tends to work? What's it like?
It's like a, is it super freaking loud? This
I'm starting to hear it. I'm hearing you have beautiful wind chimes, you know,
yeah,
or your neighbor does.
Got to batten down the hatches here.
Yeah. Yeah. Put a sail on your house. You could go somewhere.
Yeah. What was I talking? Oh, TikTok. Yeah. There's like a structure where it like starts out really slow and then this like beat drops. Do you know that?
Yep.
Like that's one thing that works really well on TikTok. And then just like a lyric, like a catchphrase that people can latch onto and like make videos inspired by it. I haven't really figured out any catchphrases that feel like me that would work on TikTok.
Yeah, because that's the kind of thing with it. It's like it's not trying to figure out you. It's trying to figure out like the universal vibe, I guess, or something that a lot of people can just repeat with it and like borrow it, basically. You want them to take it and make their own thing with it. So you're kind of almost thinking like, what's the most universal thing I can put out there without it being so bland?
I mean, Coming Home, my song Coming Home has done really well on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course it has. Yeah, I've seen so many.
There's a lot of like, military coming home people, which like really moving. It's like those TikToks that are like more like tearjerker TikToks.
Yeah, inspirational.
Which is really cool. But I want to figure it out like how to make a new song that works. You know, that's an old song for me.
Yeah. And I think that's, I guess that's an example of it. It's almost like, do I ever want to do TikTok? Do you? I mean, probably not. But maybe there's something. It's almost like in comedy, it's an improv game of like when you do improv or your friend invites you to one of those improv shows you don't want to go to. They have all these games, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of them may lead to a full-on sketch that, you know, becomes the thing, I guess. So I suppose that there's always something to learn from these things that.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm frustrated because I'm like, I'm not going to sit down and write a song for TikTok. Like, that's stupid. That's not me. That doesn't feel authentic, you know? So I kind of am just like waiting. I'm going to write music as I do, being emotionally inspired to do whatever I do. Mm-hmm. And then just keep an eye out for like, oh, this sounds like a good one to try to promote on TikTok, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to necessarily sit down and like plan on writing a TikTok hit.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel authentic to me at all. But it's frustrating because it's definitely like the thing right now. I think a lot of like labels are focusing on it. And it's become a very important aspect of, you know, promoting a song.
Right.
And that's frustrating to me.
Is it different than writing? Like, I at one point, wasn't it like, or maybe this is always in music, but it's like, hey, get your song on this TV show or this movie or something. With the trolls thing you were talking about. I mean, is it different than that, though, from an artistic perspective for you? You're still writing something for something else, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like that. If I were to sit down and try to write a song for TikTok, it would feel like I was writing a song for trolls. Like emotionally, it would feel like that.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, it's good that you know yourself as an artist to say, that's not going to be what I'm going to focus on. But I suppose that comes with years and years of success that you've got the ability to do that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like at a point where I'm just being very brutal about where I spend my time creatively because I've done so much over the years of stuff that I am not proud of or that I don't love. Mm-hmm. And life's too short to be doing that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If there were an artist coming up today and you were to give them advice, would you say to do as you're doing now, or would you say you got to kind of play the game for a little bit before you get to this point?
It's a really good question. I'd probably tell them not to play the game.
Yeah,
because I think that's where I lost myself so many times. Was trying to like, I think looking back, I would have been more successful in it, at least in the way that I wanted to be successful, if I had just purely stuck to like what I loved and what I wanted to do creatively. I think that would have at least established my mood and my brand and my vibe way better than me bouncing around and trying all these different things. And then I feel like sometimes I look at my career and my branding and everything. And I'm like, people must be like, what the fuck is she? Like, who is she? Changed her hair a million times, works on all these different genres. Like, you know, like at the end of the day, an artist is a brand and mm-hmm. people have to be invested in it to be a fan. They have to like love it and latch onto it. And it's hard when you're, you know, being so confusing to the world. Mm. I feel like I've confused people a lot in my career. And it's because I was like driven by these like short term, like, oh, I'm going to chase this or try this or do that to like have short term success. But then like overall, it created this like kind of confusing thing.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense. So who are you? Who is the you that you're doubling down on now? What does that look like?
It's this like, I mean, I'm making really moody music right now. Music that I would actually buy and listen to.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's top 40 or not.
Yeah.
And I just shaved my head recently.
It looks nice.
Thank you. I actually have never felt more beautiful.
You look very beautiful.
It's something I've always wanted to do this, and it was on my bucket list, and I never had the balls to do it.
Well, you did recently. It.
And I did it. Yep.
Did you
I'm
have a
just
moment?
Just doing me for
good.
Once. Good. You know?
Yeah. I like it. Now, did you have a moment after you did it where you're like, oh no, what did
no.
I do? No. That's great. Mm-mm. Look at that.
No, I've been super stoked. I like, for the first time ever, like looking at myself in the mirror. I used to avoid the mirrors because I just like hated it.
Really?
Yeah. It's weird. It like changed my whole confidence level.
Did you do the buzz cut yourself?
My fiance did it.
Oh, nice. Was yeah. he encouraging of it?
Yeah.
That's great.
I think that's also what helps is, you know, I never thought that the guy I was with would like me to have a buzzed head.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think he's going to like that. And so then when he was like super supportive of the idea, yeah, I made it easier.
You left a little bit, didn't you? Don't you have a little bit back?
Yeah, there? I have a little rat tail.
Oh, nice. You're bringing the rat tail back.
I know.
I always wanted a rat tail. I had a buddy in first grade who had a rat tail. And I was like, Mom, can I get a rat tail? Mom? And she said, no. So, hey, it's not over for me yet, though. Maybe
yep,
I can.
You do
maybe,
it.
Maybe. Yep. Okay.
I encourage it.
So that is you, though. You're getting, you're taking off like the layer.
Yeah, I'm just finally like being really brutal about everything I'm working on. I've been asked to do so many sessions this past year that don't feel like me, and I've said no.
Mm.
I've been really, really selective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it too. Just like, okay, I'm putting my foot down. This is the vibe I want to have. This is the way I want to sing. These are the topics I want to sing about. And just being brutal about it.
Is it hard saying no, especially when you know it could be lucrative?
Yep. Yeah. But I'm luckily at a place financially where I'm very stable right now. So yep. I can say no.
That's great.
I can afford to say no.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. And what are you most excited about creatively now? Do you have a song that you're most excited about, an album on the horizon?
I do have an album on the horizon I'm working on, and I'm pretty much self-producing it, which is exciting. And then I also have some collaborations on the way, some more collabs, one with a rapper, one in EDM. Space. So
excellent.
But with maintaining my mood.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It's the key.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. Any plans on getting a second, third home in Wisconsin?
I'm sorry. I probably won't be doing that.
Well, don't say no too long. You know, water shortage is a thing, and there's a lot of fresh water in Wisconsin. So, you know, before you
write. This is true.
Do you go back to visit? At all?
I do, like probably a couple times a year, usually for like a wedding or a birthday party or something.
Yeah, and do you enjoy it when you're there? Are you like,
yeah,
it's time to go? You do? Yeah. So you've fond memories of it.
Absolutely.
When you go back to Wisconsin, what's the thing you got to do while you're there?
I love how, like, I was just there in, I think it was July for a wedding or June, I don't know. And it was so green.
Mm-hmm.
I just love driving around and seeing like the just all the green lush, because it's not like that in California. It's like brown and dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the summer especially. And I forgot growing up there how like wet it was and rainy, and I love that and I miss that. So just like driving around and I don't know, seeing it. The other thing I love, this is gonna sound really weird, but it's like really nostalgic for me, is seeing all the silos.
Oh yeah.
At the farms. Yeah. I love silos for some reason. I have like a weird obsession with silos.
She's a silo gal, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Loves a good silo.
No, because like when I grew up there, our my parents' friends had this barn that they converted into a house. And in the silo, they had a winding staircase going up it. Uh-huh. And so I have this like magical memory of being in this winding staircase inside the silo. And so every time I see these silos, it just takes me back. It's like this really extreme nostalgic feeling.
I have a feeling as you're shaving off the layers and just getting to you and doing music that's just you, you're going to buy a silo in Wisconsin, convert it into like a house and record in it. Cause I bet you the acoustics in a silo,
could
I actually have no idea. It could be interesting.
It would probably be very weird.
It would be very weird. Maybe you got one in you. I don't know. Maybe maybe there's
like
a silo.
I like this idea.
Yeah, maybe there's a silo for you in Wisconsin.
Silo Studios.
See? You got the alliteration. Yeah. It works. And if you go on Craigslist right now, they are selling silos. People are selling silos. Yeah. That's kind of like, I think, more of a tragic undertone of the loss of like smaller farms in Wisconsin. But, you know, you could still get one. Some of them even just say free. You just gotta move it, you know. You gotta figure out how to move a silo. I've seen on YouTube videos, so I can send you one of those. I'll send you one,
dude.
Yeah,
can you send me a silo?
I'll send you a silo. I'm gonna find a silo for you on Craigslist. I'm gonna send it to you, and then I'll even look up how to move a silo to Napa.
You probably can just put it on the big semi, right?
Yeah, I think that's how they do it. They I only saw them moving it, but I gotta do a little more research for you.
Okay.
Here, but
because I have a like a lot of land here in Napa. Mm-hmm. And we could put a silo out in the field here.
Yeah,
and I could build a studio in it.
This is great. I'm going to do the research.
This is brilliant.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And if it is too hard to move, you're just going to have to buy a place in Wisconsin. And every time you got a wedding or whatever, you know, get over there.
Stay in the silo.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be fun. Where are you staying? Holiday Inn? No, silo. Silo Studios, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad.
I love this idea. This is brilliant.
I'm glad we came up with this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for my email. in the course of this interview, was there anything that you're like, I really wish he asked me that, and he didn't ask me that? No one ever asked me that. I wish he asked me that.
I don't think so. Did I explain the whole, like, I mean, obviously right now I'm trying to promote my song.
Yeah.
Last One Standing.
Yeah.
Featuring.
It's a great song.
Polo G, Mozzie, and Eminem.
Yeah.
And it's part of the Venom movie. I think we covered everything.
Great. And I'll put that in the intro too. So then we'll bookend it promoting it.
Okay,
so that'd be good. Yeah.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, thank you. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad
thank
we could
you.
Make it work.
Yeah.
Sorry for making you get up so early. Jeez.
Oh, no worries. It's honestly not that early. It's just for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a weirdo. But
well, no, you're just you, you know?
Hey.
Yeah, that was nice, Charlie.
That was
okay.
So sweet.
All right. Well, enjoy the wind today, and I really appreciate you. This is a great conversation.
Thank you. Likewise.
All right. I'll send you that silo.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
And that's it for this week's episode of the Cripes Cast. Make sure you follow Skylar Gray on Instagram. That's at Skylar Gray. And check out her new release, Last One Standing. You can find it anywhere you find music. And it's a real banger, ladies and gentlemen, so make sure you download that one real quick. Also, you can follow the Cripescast, that's at Cripescast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Make sure you follow along. And if you're still listening, I would love it if you rated the podcast and left us a comment. That would be, geez, Louise, that would be so nice of you. And if you do it, I'm sending you my newest batch of jerky, okay? Honest to Pete. No, you can hold me to that. Okie dokes. Everyone have a great day. Keep her moving. Tell your folks I says hi. Bye-bye.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.